Don't start it with.
Don't fucking do that.
Season 4, episode 11 of the Mighty Lug Radio.
Mighty Lug Radio.
I'm Matthew Ravel.
I'm Jono Bacon.
I'm A. Bradshaw, but I won't be taking part in all of this intro.
And I'm Stuart Langridge, and neither will I.
Conscientious objectors. So, we've got quite a lot in this show. We've got an interview with Open Moloko.
We've got
Open
Moloko getting down in Acapulco.
Yeah, that's it. Your ass.
My ass is in the segment.
We're talking about value-added services, aren't we?
Yep, commercial services and within how we talk to them.
Yep, and there
was
something
about click and run.
Oh, yeah, click and run. Yeah. I enjoy recording the show.
I enjoy it. I think it's a good thing.
You never know quite how to do an intro, so what I often ask is, what would Jesus do?
What would Jesus do?
Come by, Lord.
I'm feeling the love.
Bring it back, sing it back. Oh no, that's Moloko. Open Moko. So what's that then?
Open Moko. I thought it was Open Merkin.
Yeah. Moloko Velocet. There's one for you.
What's that song? That something Moloko.
I want a coffee.
Going down the Moko.
I don't know.
Open Moko, dump it down the Moko. I don't know what it is. It's very difficult.
Going loco, loco. Down in Acapulco.
That's it, yeah. It's so, very difficult singing a song when you don't know any of the lyrics or the tune.
Talk amongst yourself.
Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow, their daughter, she's talking about herself in the third person. She goes, Apple iPhone home. And I think, because they brought that out, right?
Jesus, you've been reaching, haven't you?
What? I didn't understand.
Apple
that.
iPhone.
Fuck no, it. I got the Apple iPhone bit, but what's
their
it got to be?
Their daughter's called Apple, right?
Oh, right, okay.
Anyway, so
makes a lot more sense if you know that, obviously.
Apple are bringing out this lockdown, probably overpriced, fancy piece of ass phone.
It does look very nice.
Yeah, but it's about time that we had a talk about things like the green phone and Open Moko.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to Open Moko's website today.
And what did you see?
I just like a load of text and shit, man. And I was looking
what
at
you
it.
Expecting?
And I was thinking.
We ought to explain a bit more what it is.
Hardcore duck pornography.
I was thinking, but what is it? What is it? And it appears to be some kind of Linux-based platform for mobile phone devices.
It's an SDK, isn't it?
There are two different things. Open Moko itself is a Linux operating system for phones, basically. And then a firm called FIC, I think they're called, Taiwanese firm, building a phone.
A bit thick.
And they develop this Open Moko platform
to
run on it.
It's not twice as big as every other phone on the market, is it?
No.
It's not like really unstylish or something.
It's actually made out of a brick.
It actually does look quite a nice phone.
The thing that must really, really annoy them, I shall ask the guy, because we're talking to the Open Moko guy shortly.
That's a good idea.
It is.
Fancy that.
The thing that must really annoy them is it looks just like the Apple iPhone, but they can't have known Apple were coming out with
There's another
iPhone.
Phone on the market that looks exactly like that, causing some controversy.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's just go on.
No,
that doesn't look exactly like it. Its name is exactly
which one is
like
it now?
It.
God.
Oh, come on, mate.
It was on Dig.
Oh, well, if it was on Dig, then most of our fandom will have listened.
All right.
Alex and Kevin on Dig Nation had an argument about it.
I didn't
the phone,
that.
This Taiwanese
CF other person's
what's
podcast.
It called? The Gem 1972, or whatever
it's called. The Neo 1973, I think. Yeah. Because Neo, because it's new, and 1973, because that was the first time someone ever made a mobile phone call. It's a completely stupid name.
But I thought it was 1959 at Xerox Park that they first did cell phones.
Don't look at me, pal. I just read it on the website.
But yeah, it doesn't look that much like the iPhone. Media.
It's the same kind of flat oval touchscreen design.
But that's
quite similar. Like
that's by the by.
It's not oval as the iPhone. It's fucking square. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
That's by the by because
it is by the by.
The point is, yeah.
What's the point, Matt?
A song by anyway. The point is that it's a platform that any mother can build a phone around.
Yeah, definitely.
Just like Windows Mobile.
Just like Qtopia.
Yeah. And there's the thing, right?
Which Trolltech are using with the green phone. Yeah. Which is another Linux-based phone.
So it's open source?
Yes.
Yep.
But is it free to develop a phone? And if so,
We have questions.
How to open Moco
you
make
can develop a phone for free.
Well, I saw the green phone.
Make a phone for free.
Yeah.
I saw the green phone in at LCA,
yes.
And I was quite intrigued to see what it's like. And I have to say, it felt a bit shit.
Is it environmentally friendly?
It felt like a phone from 3-4 years ago.
It looks like a phone from 2000.
It looks like the kind of phone that like is always free in an upgrade plan, and you want the one that's like 50 quid in an upgrade plan.
It didn't have a coily handset going down to a big battery.
Did you just go Irish? For a second.
Coily.
Coily handset, you little bastard.
Adrian. Hello there.
All right.
We'll be off to Ireland later.
Yes.
A thing that I found out today, which I had no idea, I thought Motorola, didn't they do a Linux smartphone at some point?
Yes.
And they do loads. They do loads of Linux-based phones, and they've released loads of code as open
source. Loads.
20 or so.
Really?
Yeah, see, I was amazed.
Available, though, in the Far East, not here, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
There is no Motorola Linux Power Phone that I've seen in the UK.
Which is why I refer to it.
Because I've always wanted to get one.
Oh, what about the A1000?
I'm quite prepared to believe that.
Anyway, that's why I said it's kind of half-assed, because everyone seems to do things that's available in, like, Taiwan or Japan.
Yeah.
That's, like, Linux-based devices.
Like PlayStation 3.
But they never make it here.
Like that thing you had, the Zaurus.
Yeah.
The new version, that was only available
in Japan, yeah.
Are they still making that?
That's Microsoft's fault,
isn't it? Just stopped it. As of today or yesterday or something, Sharp have discontinued the Zaurus line.
So the last person who was a customer... in the West. Last person who was a customer died. No longer needed a Zaurus.
The last person who was a customer was probably me, and I bought an Archos.
So, all right, let's...
Which I don't like either.
Let's cut to the chase. Let's interview this dude. Mickey Mouse from
Open Moloco.
Open Moloco Loco going
Open
yoke.
Open Moco.
Open Yoko Ono.
Moco! Japanese for one A.
Oh, I was going to say that.
Okay, on the show now we've got Mickey Lauer, who is from the Open Moco project. How are you doing, Mickey?
I'm fine. Hi, guys.
Good. Hello.
Guten Abend.
So tell us, what is Open Moco and tell us what it's all about?
So, basically, there are two things we have to talk about here. One thing is the OpenMoco Linux distribution, which is our attempt to create a standard mobile phone platform open source. And the other thing is the FIC Neo 1973, which is the first phone supposed to run this OpenMoco distribution.
Okay. Talk to us about OpenMoco first.
Yeah.
Did you invent OpenMoco and then FIC came to you and said, we'd like to use it, or did they ask you to produce it, or what?
They asked us to do that. They came, it was basically Sean Mospols, a product manager inside FIC, who's been working on some handsets.
Right.
He's a pretty enthusiastic open source guy, and he always tried to get his vision of a completely customizable phone done. And then he came to look out for some potential contributors to this initiative. And he found Mr. Harald Welte, known as the GPL enforcement guy.
Yeah. GPL violence.
And Mr. Harald Welte introduced him to me because Harald Welte knew me from the OpenEZX project.
Yeah. Sorry, and, what was his name?
So I got on board. And then he asked me to be the lead software architect for the OpenMoco home platform.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
And now I'm stuck being in this position.
Excellent. So, one thing that I was wondering, the mobile phone market is all about lockdown. It's all about networks stopping you moving to another network. It's all about providers being very controlling over what content you can use on your phone and what you can do with the device. So, how have you found dealing with that sort of industry when you're from an open source free software background, where you know we want everything to be open and happy and friendly, and the phone industry seems to be all about really limiting what you can do with their equipment as they see it?
I think it's a tough job. It's like you're introducing a completely new way of thinking into the industry. Basically, I think the strongest momentum we found from the side of the industry is that they just have fear because of alienated software, viruses and stuff obfuscating the network and basically attacking the network in one sense. I think this is their strongest fear. And their second strongest fear is, of course, when you have an open market, what they provide is then not so important anymore, because you have actually more sources to get content from.
Absolutely.
And I think this is what they are afraid of as
so,
well.
So will OpenMoco make it easy for networks to lock devices into their network only, or
absolutely not?
Right.
We won't take any. We control the platform, and it's really open source. We as the community, so there's no way we allow any DRM stuff or cluster platform module or whatever into the platform.
Okay, cool. I just with FIC, I take it that they're slightly different to other device manufacturers then, because they're happy to work with an open system.
Absolutely. So Sean has kind of convinced the guys at FIC to be really to let this project be driven by the needs of the community.
Ah,
and
excellent.
What we a couple of things were basically settled. That was more or less the hardware platform.
Yeah.
And the rest. So what GUI to use, what libraries to use. This all was in our decision.
Okay.
And this is a kind of a freedom which I never experienced
Fantastic.
With any device manufacturer.
Cool. I was going to actually ask you about the hardware. I mean, is it limited to what one processor? Does it work with all processors? What processor have you chosen?
So actually, the first device, the Neo 1973, is right now using a pretty old system on chip, which is I think 3 or 4 years old Samsung.
Okay.
S3C.
So currently OpenMoco only supports that, or it's going to support more?
OpenMoco basically can support everything. It's
okay.
It's just a matter of customizing the couple of low level details.
Right.
For instance, we have this we contributed the libgsm, because there's just no free GSM daemon in the open source world yet.
Yeah.
And this is what we contributed, and of course this works with the TI model which we are using.
Yeah.
But we are hoping to for the community to port this also to other GSM modems.
Cool.
Fantastic. I mean, we're certainly all in agreement that the project's not only very interesting but also very important. I don't want this question to seem cynical. It's not intended to seem cynical, but we've seen a lot of kind of embedded development platforms arriving. You know, there's things like Qtopia, there's MAMO and things like that.
Right.
And they offer a lot of promise at first, and you expect there's going to be loads and loads of applications and people using it in interesting ways.
Yeah.
But it always seems to fizzle out a bit, and it always seems like they don't really go all that far. How do you think this is going to be any different?
Well, one of the our basic assumptions was we want to be able to run as much applications as possible from the available application base. So this means X11 was one of the base paradigms.
Wow.
And this is what, for instance, ruled Qtopia out. Qtopia is a really mature platform, but it's A, not open source, and B, due to its using Qt embedded, it just locks anything not Qt out.
Yes. So would you say that it's what you're doing is you're creating a platform which is much closer to traditional Linux development?
Actually, that's very, very true. That's the heart of it.
Right.
I think we're trying to create a standard bottom up. So starting from the community, what the community wants, as opposed to doing it top down, what a factory or a company wants.
Makes a lot of sense.
That makes a lot of sense. So I'm assuming, therefore, it will be easier for people to port applications to that device, to devices running OpenMoco, then?
Absolutely. We are in theory, we can run all X11 applications. What we have done is to add some widgets on top of GTK that realize our kind of idea what a phone platform, what a smartphone UI should look like.
Right.
But you're not forced to use that. You can just Yeah, write other GTK applications, and they will work on the OpenMoco system.
Awesome. Fantastic. That's
so
awesome.
That is very cool, yes. That means that...
Calm down, Matt.
No, that is... I was just thinking about the implications of that as I was saying it, and that is really cool.
You're thinking about porn on your phone.
No, I was thinking about Frozen Bubble on the phone.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever you call it, carry on.
Anyway, sorry. Forgive my ignorance, but is OpenMoco, is there a business behind it, or is it literally just a community, and then you're working with businesses like FIC?
My idea, I think, as far as I understood, because I'm not 100% involved in the FIC internal stuff, I'm just a freelancer hired by FIC.
Right.
But as far as I know, they just made OpenMoco a startup, a spin-off from inside FIC.
Oh.
The same they did to HTC a couple of years ago. So I think this is because they just want to be on a safe side, no matter where OpenMoco is going to go towards.
Right. So did they specify it should be open source?
OpenMoco is, it's a corporation,
yeah.
But it's... more or less funded by FIC.
Right, and did you say that they own HTC as well?
They did. They no longer.
Because obviously they're one of the main producers of Windows mobile devices.
Obviously.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're the people who produce the O2 XDA and all
that. Oh, okay. Right. So a couple of years, the same process happened with engineers from FIC being in a spin-off called HTC.
Right, so that's very interesting. Okay, so, and then my other question is, you mentioned that, OpenMoco will be specified by the community, and rather than a bunch of people in a factory. But, who is the market for OpenMoco? Who's the market for these devices? I mean, is it, obviously it's not your teenage girl at a bus stop. It's not... I assume an old lady. So is it people in business, or is the market going to be a very small group of geeks like us?
I think
thanks, man.
I think it is all of it, but in different phases. So of course the first phase is just developers like us. It's of course a geek device. It's the first mobile phone that runs SSH out of the box.
Hey,
yeah.
So it's the first one that gives you a shell without trying to reverse engineer any stuff.
So
this is just cool, but this is a geek thing. So, but in looking at midterm, the idea is that once the community has access to an open platform, they will create kick-ass applications on that platform.
Nice,
which
excellent.
May be interested for your mum and dad.
Right,
at some point of time.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
My dad can run top.
Mickey, you're obviously heavily involved in the Open Embedded project.
Right.
On which was built OpenZaurus and things
Open
like that.
I've and all that stuff.
I've been involved with OpenZaurus. I'm really excited about Open Embedded. It's really cool. You know, which is why I've worked with it a bit. But...
what? You filed a bug report.
No. I did the website for OpenZaurus, you cheeky bastard.
Oh, right.
Okay. Anyway, right. How much of the stuff that you did for Open Embedded got reused as OpenMoco?
Let's say, given the base distribution, it's like 75%, which means we really exploit Open Embedded, right. Which is a good thing because Open Embedded is actually done for things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
We are using a lot of Open Embedded, so the whole base system is just let's say distro is equal generic and machine is equal to Neo, and then you say bid bake standard image, and then it looks a whole lot like the OpenMoco distribution.
Cool.
So the only stuff we really added is the libgsm, is the OpenMoco library set, which contains the widgets, and a couple of OpenMoco specific applications.
Cool.
But other than that, it's all Open Embedded, and everything gets contributed back to Open Embedded in a couple of weeks.
Fantastic. Cool. That's excellent. I mean, are there any OpenMoco devices available other than the FIC device? Are they likely to be in the future, or are they now?
I think they are not yet, but I think once we go public with the platform, it's just a matter of a couple of weeks to see OpenMoco on all the Motorola EZX phones.
Excellent. All the ones that are currently Linux smartphones.
Right. And awesome. I think it also won't take the HTC community long to port it to the Universal and the Magician and stuff like cool. that. So the hardest part of that is to port the GSM driver to the new to the ATX to the AT interface to the new ones and the theme is another thing.
Excellent. I mean, a slightly stupid question. I don't really understand this. If you're porting OpenMoco to a new device, what can you put it on any phone you
like the iPhone?
In theory, yes. So the
could you put it on an iPhone? That'd be excellent.
So let's say at least you need a Linux kernel on the device.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Because OpenMoco really is just. On top of the Linux.
Oh, the FIC phone.
Right, yeah, because the FIC phone is ARM9, I think.
Right.
Yeah, it is. Cool. Okay. But it you think it's going to end up on a lot of other devices as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I was part of the OpenAZX project, I still am, and we are nearly having all the kernel problems sorted out. And then what we are waiting for is some stuff to put on top of that. And so we have OP, which is okay, but not quite good. And honestly, GPE is also okay, but not really quite good. And
GPE being the GNOME palm top environment.
Right. So this is I think we have high hopes to make OpenMoco a really good phone user interface, and anyone can use it.
Right, that's fantastic.
Is he talking on an OpenMoco
phone? Yeah, it is really exciting stuff.
Are you on an OpenMoco phone at the moment?
No, not yet. I'm on the landline.
Oh, that's very disappointing.
Yeah, I have prototype hardware, but I'm afraid the audio subsystem is not ready.
When can we have a review model?
So, if you want to send us a review model, we'll be happy to review it for you.
Four
review models. Sorry, you're quite right. So, where do we go to find out more? OpenMoco.org just says, go away, we're not ready yet.
Right. So, at the moment, OpenMoco.com is the single source of information. And
it's not much information. It's
absolutely, that's right. But it will change in just 2 weeks.
Okay.
In 2 weeks, cool. we will go live with a couple of websites, with the Wiki, with the Bugzilla, with the Planet, and... all the stuff will be ready in 2 weeks.
Fantastic. Don't forget you can translate it in Launchpad.
Excellent. Thank you very much for talking to us, Mickey.
Thank you, Mickey. Keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work.
Bye.
I will, thanks.
Cheers.
The thing is interesting that the people who are sponsoring this OpenMoco jobby are the guys who created the XDA and all of that.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that they said they need to be open source.
Yeah, and those phones have got mass market appeal.
Well, they created the XDA and then spun it off as a separate company.
Sure, but it's been a successful Windows mobile device company.
Can I just
say, now they're thinking, right, let's go open.
How many of you want this phone now?
Me! I want one!
Yeah, but it's
free. I want a shell on my phone and I want to type top on it.
Now, you see, I'm a bit different. I think it's great what they're doing, but it's like, I've seen all this shit before.
You had the System 60 phones, you run Python on. Yeah. You went, oh, I can start a Python prompt, then couldn't think of anything to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, I was thinking it would be great to do things like Mobi blogging thing, you know, where you can take a picture and automatically upload it to your site. And I thought that kind of stuff is quite interesting. But, you know, it's just, there's a lot of these kind of embedded projects out there, and they sound very exciting because they're gadgety. But ultimately, I think they kind of fizzle out after a little while. Don't get me wrong. I really hope they're successful. But I just think it's another one of these fucking devices that we've seen over and over again.
It's totally different, though, isn't it? Because you can develop for it.
Well, I could develop for Azorus. I could develop for my mobile phone that I've got now. My phone right now, my Nokia System 60 phone is developed. I can develop software for that. I could develop software for the Nokia 770 with MIMO, you know? It's kind of like, I can do this stuff, but the point is, I never do.
Yeah, I mean, you're...
you know?
Does it run X?
I have to say, I personally am quite interested, because I do work with embedded devices. I had a Sharp Zaris, now I've got an Archos. They're both Qtopia devices, but I've written software for them, I've helped the project.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating, and the fact that I can have a phone that does
projects
it...
Projects and
they're going,
who
better.
The fuck's that? What's he done?
I haven't done much work for them, I admit it.
He's written a load of half-finished unpublished code. Sorry, I gave him a shooing the other day about this.
Thank you.
Yeah, in fact, this project shouldn't exist because it means you're not writing fucking Jacosha code.
Here's the thing, though, right?
It's a distraction for Langridge.
What concerns... I think it is very interesting. I think what's particularly interesting, like I say, is that FIC spun out HTC. But what concerns me is that the...
With P2P.
Yeah.
The square root of V.
The guys... Sorry, the market, the way that it works is really all about lockdown, the phone market.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think you made that point.
I
quite
did,
strongly.
And I'm saying that I think that's what concerns me about it. I think that'll be its
serious,
biggest
taking
danger.
Taking his glasses off.
And I think the only way to get around it,
Tony Blair,
is that people fuck off. Is that people will have to
turns northern for a second.
Is that people will have to, like us, will have to fork out the full price for it. It won't get a network subsidy.
I don't agree. So there's two different things. There's software you can run on the phone itself,
yeah,
and then what you can do with the phone on the network,
right.
And practically every phone now allows you to run Java applications.
No, that's not my point.
And you can download those Java applications and run them on your phone, and you're fine. So the OpenMoCo thing gives you the ability to run programs which are a bit more native than running in a little Java sandbox. But just because you can write an application on the phone doesn't mean you'll magically be able to have it reach out to the internet. Your network provider has to allow that, and they still won't do so.
If they're not going to allow things like locking to a specific network on OpenMoCo, now I agree that your network provider could write a specific bit of software to go on there and put locking in, but with an open platform it would be much more difficult for them to lock down. They're not going to like it, and they're not going to look at a phone and go, all right, well, we'll have to put some effort into write a locking down to our network application.
Oh, right, so your problem is not that... You think that other phone providers won't pick up OpenMoCo and use it on their phones?
I think networks won't be interested in subsidising devices that run OpenMoCo, because when they subsidise them, the vast majority of networks these days want to lock the phone to only use their network.
But I'm missing something here. I mean, there's no reason. First of all, you can get phones unlocked. But secondly, there's no reason why they couldn't ship you a phone with OpenMoCo with the locking code in it. Yes, you could install your own OpenMoCo over the top, but if you've got an XDA, you could install OpenMoCo on it. They're not going to abandon XDAs. Familiar Linux on an XDA.
The other thing that we've got to bear in mind is this OpenMoCo thing runs on a phone that runs that has a Linux kernel running on it, and that was kind of skated over as like, oh, that's all right. How many fucking phones have got a Linux kernel running?
Quite
on
a few.
All the smartphones are running on a few different chips, like ARM chips, and there's Linux for ARM.
Look at the whole Palm. Of Palm are based on Linux now.
Exactly. Phones.
Sure, but
phones don't have magic processors that don't exist anywhere else. They're ARM processors, or they're X-Scale Intel processors.
Yeah,
which are ARM-based anyway.
The things that end
up
in PDA. They might be.
But the point I'm making
is not my field. The
point I'm making is, I remember first hearing about Linux on a mobile phone, what, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and I was thinking, the minute I can buy a phone from Orange, I'm with Orange, that's running Linux,
that's orange.
I will buy one of these phones, right? And I've not seen a single one appear.
And that's
and
my
the
point.
Thing is, and this, yeah, and this hooks in with Matt's
distribution.
Point, I'm not going to spend £300 on a phone and get it all get it hooked up to my network when I can spend £45 on a phone. And this is my point earlier on, is that these projects are very good technically, very impressive about what it gives us the ability to do. But until it starts hitting the market and people can start buying these phones en masse, then...
Until it starts hitting the market in the UK. If you're in Hong Kong or Singapore or Japan...
What about US?
Very, very good point.
I've got no idea about the US.
I mean, sure,
Linux is far more prominent in Japan.
I know they're not here. I know they are in the Far East. I don't know whether they're in the States.
We have Far Eastern listeners. Email in
with
your experiences, dudes.
Earlier on... I happened to tell my colleagues here a story about when I was 7.
Remind us.
And
love your stories.
They seem to think it was a segment. When I was very young, I about 7 years old, I guess, I decided to get a mirror and look at my arse in it.
We're not just talking about the cheeks, are we?
No.
It's the actual rusty bullet hole.
The actual rusty bullet hole.
Your chocolate balloon knot there in the mirror.
Kids do these kind of things.
You see, no.
First of all, right, you never mentioned it was when you were a kid. You just said, have you guys ever looked at your arse in a mirror? Everyone's done that, haven't they? And we all went, what? And you said, no, you're all lying. Everyone's done that.
Although, to be honest, just before you continue, right, this isn't the only weirdness of tonight. We're sat having a cup of tea in my living room and Ak just goes... Did anyone just hear a cockerel? I mean, what the
Now, I don't actually see how this is a segment, right?
Okay.
No, well, we were going to take it on to the fact that, you know, there are...
Geeks do the weirdest things.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Animals do the funniest things. And
so what weirdness is... Well, we have already identified that you stare
once
at your ring piece.
My ass in the mirror. Right, okay.
Aki is phantom animal noises.
I do not hear phantom animal noises.
Well, you do by your own admission.
Maybe someone said the word cunt.
Well, hey, I heard that.
Let me just note down the time.
When I was young, I once tried to set fire to urine because I had this idea that it was flammable. And I remember wasting a whole box of matches pissing on them and thinking, why isn't it lighting? And not actually
tell
thinking
you what,
about
though,
the fact
that would
if
be
it
superb
it,
if it
I'd
did,
have
wouldn't
burnt
it?
I used to piss into a sponge when I was a kid in the bath.
Wow.
And I used to see how much I could fit in the sponge. Shit. And I remember one time leaving it on the side.
You've been all sick.
My mum went and had a shower.
Oh, nice.
Used the sponge.
How old are you?
Oh, about 20. 16.
Not the first time your mum's had a golden shower from you, is it?
But
no, actually. She's
here all week.
So yeah, so what weird geeky things have you seen? I've seen a lot of twitching going on recently at
there
conferences.
There is a lot of... Well, that's not fair. There's
what do you mean, looking at...
A few people out there...
Bird watching,
who twitch a bit.
You're not talking about bird watching, are you?
No.
Right, you're talking about
not
actual
that kind
tremors,
of twitching.
Right?
Tremors.
Kevin Bacon. Good film.
Some people have, like, weird kind of afflictions, don't they? Where just...
We're going to get into trouble for this segment.
What about the ones who do this?
Yeah. That works well on radio.
And their shoulder moves twice. And then, you know, they carry on.
There was a guy that I used to work with. I'm not going to say what his name is, but he was the weakest person I've ever seen. Right. I mean, he's like, his arms were like a ruler, you know. It was just so
Ruler
thin
Lenska.
And not Ruler Lenska.
Was it Elliot?
I'm not saying who it was.
I was thinking that as well.
Was it Mr. Burns?
It wasn't Elliot. It wasn't Elliot.
He tried to phone home.
It was no one at Open Advantage, okay? But yeah, this tiny little weedy fucker. And I remember whenever he'd pick a book up, he'd have to use both hands to pick it up. He was so weak and weedy and pathetic. And I remember a friend of mine was saying that he saw him walking down the road one time and this pigeon flew into his face. I'd love to have seen that. This weak, pathetic individual, right? Whispering someone's name isn't going to make me tell you.
Lug Radio, having a go at the disadvantage since 2004.
Why don't you share something with the group?
I was new.
Yeah, so, no, but I think hair and twitches is often a
hair.
Problem.
I mean, you hair? Do see some freak shows at Linux conferences, don't you?
I mean, do you remember that guy at What the Hack?
Ah, the guy with the mad bonnet.
Mad bonnet.
The Jagosha was originally going to be called Mad Bonnet.
It was.
And the reason for that was because there was a guy with a mad bonnet. Everyone who's not in the UK is going to be going, what? And half the people in the UK will be going, what? Barnet is a
so glad we talked you out of that.
Barnet fair hair.
Is it?
Yes.
I never knew that.
For fuck's sake.
That's where it comes from.
Do you know why you call people a Burke as well?
Berkshire Hunt.
Berkshire. You say the word hunt, that's perfectly acceptable.
So basically we've run out of content in this segment now.
No, come on. I've said that I tried to set my piss on fire. Ace looked at his arse in a mirror. You pissed into a sponge that your mum then used, full of your piss. Ack.
I don't do anything mad. I'm a perfectly sane and reasonable
person. Ack married
person.
His sister.
No, I didn't.
It does remind me of a leaflet I once saw at university. It was ways to avoid getting HIV. And it said, why not come in each other's hair? And I was thinking, What? Why not come
that's
on
so
his
exactly
back?
The same reason. Yeah.
Why not come on his back was the other bit.
Well, yeah. Aid'd be safe then.
Susan wasn't having any of it. I tell you what, I stole when I was a child once.
What, did you?
Yeah.
What did you steal?
One time, when I was a kid, for some reason, this is probably why I got into free software, I was interested in free things, right?
Because you were a thief.
Because I was a thief. Oh, right. And I used to go around collecting free leaflets. Right? From like Tesco's or whatever. I'd go into Tesco's and I'd pull out all these free leaflets and put them in a carrier bag. For some reason, I went into this sewing shop once and pulled out a load of free leaflets and accidentally placed a 30 pence sewing pattern in my carrier bag. I felt so guilty.
Wow. How old are you?
I never went back and gave it back. I stole 30
Did you sew the thing?
I was probably at 11, I don't know. But yeah, I didn't sew it, no. But I stole
What do you do with the leaflet? tablets?
I don't know. I just took them home. Oh. No, don't look at me like that.
Did you recycle them?
No.
It's not exactly being the fucking godfather, is it? You stole a 30p sewing pattern.
I know.
But that was back in the 80s.
I felt such guilt. Yeah, it was about 800 quid's worth of sewing pattern. Australians know what we're talking about.
Yeah,
we have a stupid currency.
Back in the 90s, there was Click and Play. Do you remember that?
Was that crappy game creation thing?
By Francois Lyon, or whatever his name was.
Yeah. If you say so.
Lyon. The guy who came up with Stoss, then Amos Refreshing.
Yes.
I don't know what you just said. You just made a load of noises there.
Amos was a brilliant...
guy who sold kebabs.
Guy out of Emmerdale Farm. It was a game creation thing for the Amiga.
For sheep. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
And you could do more than just games with it. And I wrote two games, I remember. One was called Windy Miller's Big Day Out. And the other one was called Them Bloomin' Aliens. And,
I thought you might have wrote an interactive poetry simulator.
Fuck you.
that was particularly me. Anyway, Matt, we weren't going to talk about Click and Play at all.
Oh, yeah, Click and Run, right?
Let's keep going with Click and Play. Sounds cool.
No, it was. It was a bit like the shoot 'em up construction kit.
Yes, I remember it.
Wow. Did you ever have that kind of 3D software development thing for the Commodore 64 or whatever it was?
No,
I can't remember what it was.
Spectrum.
Did you ever look at your ass in the mirror?
No, nobody does that.
On both sides.
What?
Bald at both ends.
Bald at both ends, so.
Bald at both ends is quite right.
So anyway, yeah.
It's not true at all.
That could be a website, could it?
Bald, oh, so you've got a hairy ring piece is what you're telling us.
Well, a lot of
the anal Brillo pad. Okay, carry on.
I mean, it looks like one of them kids' pictures of the sun with all the lines coming out.
I thought it was going to be like one of those things where you put a magnet under a piece of cardboard and those iron filaments kind of move. Look,
are you both discussing my ass?
Where would the Winnets go otherwise? I
mean, the what? Winnets?
It's a Geordie term.
Oh, is that for like club
Geordie
nuts?
Term for yeah, what? Yeah. Oh, right.
The Winnet move.
Clagnuts or Clugnuts?
Richard Rutter's website is called clagnut.com.
Who's Dangleberries. I like Dangleberries.
Dangleberries.
Anyway, we seem to have moved off the... Kevin Carmody's listening to this.
Well, Kevin...
Kevin.
You've announced... Let's do everything in the second person. You've announced that Click and Run is going to be available for users of other distributions.
Yeah, John, I read that on the internet.
That's third person.
Sorry. What's fourth person?
Fourth.
My son, Jono, read that on the internet.
You, formerly.
Yeah, Vous avez Lee.
Anyway.
Lanternet. Anyway, right, so Click and Run, available for other distributions.
Yes.
And this raises an interesting...
How do I do it? How do you do it?
Exactly, yeah. There you go.
Is there an RPM for Red Hat?
Don't know, mate.
A click and run RPM or something?
Listen, I read the headline, Lee Miller.
Now, the question is this click and run that's run as a central service that supports other distros, or is this click and run that other distros can use
as
their own thing?
As I understand it, if you're running Fedora, Red Hat, SUSE, whatever, Ubuntu.
So it's running on linbuntu.com.
That's what I was going to say. They've got click and run or cnr.com, and basically you download the click and run client for your distro.
Right.
Yeah.
And then suddenly your software repository is run by Linspire. Mm. You're running like a bastard child.
For the whole
of the
operating system or just for their
packages?
No,
just add-on
shit.
Click and run supports a hell of a lot of stuff.
Right.
So you end up with this kind of bastard distro. Your basic operating system stuff, which as we discussed previously, stretches into a lot of areas you wouldn't expect, comes from your normal distro. But then if you want to say install, I don't know, let's say
Media
Jocosha
Codecs.
One day,
I mean, that's one thing they're famous for, isn't it?
Comes down through the click and run warehouse. So,
okay.
I mean, in my mind, it's very similar.
Hang on, let Matt finish.
So okay. How does this work? How do you end up not getting some horribly broken system? So, for example, Automatics is a set of scripts that installs various things on Ubuntu. When you then come to upgrade to the next version of Ubuntu, you use the Automatics, it regularly breaks because it's not an official thing and it's not supported. So if people are installing click and run and installing software from this other central repository, how is that not just going to break load of distros?
I'd say there's a couple of issues here. First of all, it's very similar. I think there's a difference between, like you say, core operating system stuff. Like, would you want X installing via click and run, which I suspect most people wouldn't. And then there's the issue of...
But I imagine that stuff isn't available through click and run.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I've no idea.
As far as I'm aware, it is not.
Right. Whereas the it's more applications sort of thing.
Yeah, and the latest version of Firefox might be. Yeah. But as Akka said before, you know, Gecko is really important for all sorts of things you might not expect it to be.
But the other thing is, like, for example, just speaking from Ubuntu side, there's the commercial repository where commercial applications like Adobe's Reader and things like that.
Opera are
installable.
Yeah.
So if it's purely for adding stuff on that isn't in your distro, then I personally don't really see the point.
I think it's more a case of click and run.
You don't see the point, so you don't see the problem.
Well, I don't. At the moment, I don't really see the point if it's already available for your distro. If it's not available for your distro, then it provides a service that's usable.
Right. Click and run offers lots of stuff that isn't available elsewhere and easy to get for.
Hence, its kind of reason for existing. Yeah.
The only other issue I was going to say was brought up by, I think it was Daniel Robital, an Ubuntu guy, was that Robital. Interesting.
Robert
name. Robert Ars.
No, it's French Canadian. It's Robert I.
Robert I. Daniel Robert I. I think he said something about this is going to create a bug triaging nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're going to have some bugs that live over there and some bugs that live over here. And, I mean, theoretically, Launchpad should solve all this. But. The idea, you know, the idea that you're going to be having chunks of software.
Matt looks confused.
Matt, Launchpad is this centralized.
I'm glad someone explained it.
But yeah, I mean, that's another issue that we need to bear in mind.
Well, I mean,
a lot of people have complained about, for example, the binary drivers aspect. Is that?
But forgetting that sort of thing, the problem is, I mean, let's forget about it being a packaging problem. And it's the issue is that you've got this bastard Frankenstein distribution.
On the other hand,
have that now though. Without clicking
on. No, you don't though. Because
you don't have it now at the moment.
Well, you start fucking around backports.
Well, no, you don't have it now at the moment purely because there isn't a lot of software available for you that isn't already packaged for Fedora Core, say.
Yeah.
So if you run Fedora Core, you can go and get everything from Fedora repositories. But that doesn't work with the sorts of things that are in Click and Run, because by definition they can't be distributed that way. Not all of them, at least.
Does Fedora have like the Canonical have got the commercial repository for Ubuntu? Is there a similar thing for Fedora?
There's certainly an Extras, which is like Universe.
But let's not forget.
Yeah.
I mean, Click and Run, at least part of it's there to help people distribute commercial applications.
Yeah.
On Linux.
Yeah. Like crossover Office.
Yeah, proprietary applications, you're quite right.
Encumbered.
Yeah. But
encumbered applications. The point here is that
however you make those things available, they are going to create this bastardized distribution that you're complaining about, because they will not be available from the Ubuntu repository or from the Fedora Extras repository.
So are we criticizing them for opening this up or not?
No,
I can't see how you get away from the problem that, unless you're prepared to say, I will get everything from my distro and that's it, and anything that's not on my distro, I won't run, which basically means you're prepared to eliminate the possibility of, if Adobe release Photoshop for Linux, for example, right? I mean, one of Jono's predictions was that Adobe will put out one of their creation tools on Linux this year.
Yep. So accurately referred to. I thought you might get it wrong. I'm impressed.
So say they release Photoshop or...
I'm going to very accurately say beard.
But imagine they do. Say they do that or the Flash Creation Toolkit or whatever it's called.
Yep.
And they decide to push it out through Click and Run because they want to, you know, they want to take 70 quid off people and they think it's a good distribution method. Mm. Or however they do it. If they give you an auto package for it, if you download a bin file like Google Earth or whatever, because this stuff isn't packaged for your distribution, right?
Stealing AIDS
example. You know, however you get it, you won't have got it from your distro, so then you've got a bastardized distribution.
Right, so, but... It's
not really a problem
with your distribution.
It's a problem with getting software from somewhere other than your distro, whether that's
Click and
Run or
something else. Do you ever use any software from other than from the standard repositories? Or have you got a completely pure distribution?
I usually have a completely pure distribution because Ubuntu is quite good at...
I run Ubuntu and I nearly always have to add extra repositories in.
But the thing is, to me, it's not a question of adding the odd little bit in. So you might put on...
Well, repository is not the odd little bit, is it? Well, depending on the repository, I guess.
Well, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, to me, what I'm talking about on Click and Run is that it is an alternative method for getting all the main applications
isn't
for your...
Isn't it an additional method?
Well, no, because
if it's you're not an alternative, surely.
That's not the way I understand that they push. They don't suggest you should go to Click and Run for everything that's in Click and Run and only go outside Click and Run if there's something not there. The impression I got was that you just supplement the way you ordinarily get software. It's not a replacement for the way you get
software.
It's
just extra shit
that's supplementary
available to
it. That's the impression I got from the way, though. To some extent, it's more central to Linspire. Because Linspire have basically taken a load of the stuff that would ordinarily be in Fedora Extras or whatever and put it into Click and Run.
No,
but I can't imagine they'd say, go and get Firefox from Click and Run.
But you're wrong. Because Click
they've changed their vibe a bit, I think.
No, because Click and Run is all. The whole point of Click and Run has been that it is the way to the primary interface for getting your software into Linspire. It is the interface to Apt. You can also run Synaptic or whatever, but the idea is that Click and Run is a nice, friendly, almost like they make it almost like a supermarket with different aisles and stuff
where
like
you
that.
Just click.
Where you
and
just
run.
Click and run and you get your software.
There's metadata and stuff in there as well.
So the idea is, as I understand it, that Click and Run for different distributions isn't just about getting the odd bit of software that you can't get easily otherwise. It's about getting an easy way, or as they say it, an easier way of getting all your normal software.
I think it depends on the context, though, because I'd say for Linspire, like Ak said, you know, for Linspire, it's probably much more integral to that distro, whereas for something like Ubuntu, where you're probably going to get most of your software from the normal Ubuntu repositories, and then you're probably going to install, if you want crossover Office, you'd install that from Click and Run. I think the interesting point is where you talk about bastardizing the Linux distros, because in my mind, it depends on how that's packaged. Like, VMware, right? And if VMware make a package that's linked against the libraries that are in my Ubuntu distribution, so if it's made for, let's say, Ubuntu Edgy, and that's linked against Edgy, so it's no
Cream
different
on.
To any other. It's not made against any other distro version but Edgy.
Mm.
And then whether I install that from Click and Run or whether I install that from the Ubuntu repositories or whether I install that from a CD makes no real difference because it's properly built for my system.
Mm.
Where I think it feels like a bastardized thing is where it's very generically built and it doesn't really fit in with your system and when it doesn't enter your distro upgrade path.
Can't they just stick in statically linked libraries?
You see, what
not,
we
in, not in if my, you want to statically link
Google
the
Earth.
C library.
In my mind, what we want is what Launchpad are doing for bugs, where you can update other bug tracking
Launchpad.
Systems. Right? Where
Launchpad?
Where Launchpad and let's say the Gnome Bugzilla will talk to
a
each other.
Canonical Corporation.
Right, shut up. Where Launchpad and let's say the Gnome Bugzilla will talk to each other. We need that for things like the Ubuntu or Fedora upgrade system and Click and Run.
Isn't that
so when I upgrade Ubuntu, I want it to upgrade the shit that's in Click and Run.
Stupid question. If I'm running Fedora, say, and I go to and I install the Click and Run client, does the Click and Run client talk to only the Click and Run repositories?
That's what I'm talking about.
It doesn't
talk
to my local repositories.
Don't know.
It doesn't go and get my kernels
now,
from
someone
Fedora.
Wrote a blog post in the past couple of days slagging John off for not researching before talking on Lug Radio. And
who was that?
Don't know, I saw it in a search.
did you search John O'Bacon cock?
No.
Hoping for something else.
I'd see that anytime. I don't know. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Because that I think could be interesting. If it goes and gets Fedora's Firefox, then it's obviously not a problem. Mm. If it goes and gets Click and Run's Firefox, I have no idea how the Click and Run people can push a Firefox package that's not going to bring most of a distribution in as a dependency if it's going to be if it's different from whatever's there with your ordinary Fedora version.
Hang on a fucking second. That was my blog entry. I was complaining about people not being accurate.
Yeah, and then someone made a jokey one.
That I wasn't being accurate.
Yeah.
Like, actually, some people did. Some people did say that Lug Radio in general isn't particularly accurate.
Who cares?
Who cares? Fucking.
Fuck the lot.
We have a different level of standards to anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
The sooner people realise this, the better.
You have
much lower.
In response to a discussion we had some considerable time ago, Matthew Thomas sent us an email, and I was I was digging through the list of emails that we never got around to reading out on the show.
Did he say
the hell?
Hello,
and it was
Thomas. Hello, it's my impression of Matthew Thomas.
Did he say no documentation ever? Just improve the UI.
I think you're all very mean to MPT personally.
He's a good man.
He brought up an interesting...
I can see his argument for that, by the way.
He brought up an interesting point.
What was the point?
And the point was this.
What was the point?
He said... if you go and get iPhoto or Picasa or any one of a number of commercial photo management applications, they'll have ties in them to commercial services being run by companies other than the people who sold you the software. So if you use Picasa, for example, there's a Print My Photos button.
And you only click, works in America.
And you click on that. It does not only work in America.
Okay.
That's an outrageous lie.
on Le Radio, no less.
But it was corrected, unusually.
errata on Le Radio.
But you click the button and it says, send off your photo, the selected photos, to one of these photo services. And there's half a dozen photo services listed.
Are they adult-friendly?
For the UK. Hey. Okay. I've got no idea whether they're adult friendly. and obviously those firms will have paid Google for placement in Picasa.
Or they get a cut. Right?
They get a cut.
Do we know that?
We don't know that, no. But they'll have done something.
Oh, so it's just wild speculation.
Maybe Google just decided to roll a dice and pick six firms they liked the name of to give them loads of business.
No, it's sensible, restrained speculation.
Okay. I can't believe there's not someone at Google who thought, hang on, here's a bit of a money spinner. People will pay us money. Someone's going to have thought of that, right?
Perhaps
in the same way that Firefox have been paid by Google.
Just a little bit of money.
Just a little
like
bit.
Like 60-odd million, whatever
60-odd million, so they can search go to Google.
Yeah.
Or however much it was. Doesn't matter.
That was the Blizzard of Oz, wasn't it?
It was the Blizzard of Oz, who spoke. He spoke the truth.
Who's that?
Chris Blizzard. It's the Blizzard of Oz.
Anyway, MPT's question was, are we ever going to be able to deliver that kind of tie-ins to commercial services?
With rounded corners and a gradient.
Okay. Is F-Spot going to ever have a Print My Photos button? If it is going to have a Print My Photos button, which services is it going to talk to? How do you choose whether it talks to Bonus Print or True Print or Coda?
You're making a distinction between the plug-in for Firefox and True Print, aren't you? You're not meaning that, are you?
No, sorry, just so everyone knows what Aid's talking about. On a completely separate note, while investigating getting photos printed, I was amazed to discover that if you go to the True Print website, they have a quick uploader thing to upload your photos to their website, and they provide an ActiveX control for Internet Explorer and a Firefox extension for Firefox, which I thought was very good.
Hooray! Just as a caveat,
but that's completely separate.
15 years ago, they lost about 3 films of mine. But
do you press a button on this little Firefox extension, and then like one of those little bags comes out of your floppy disk drive? You put your disk,
you put your things in it, and then it takes it away. No, you don't. Right? We're not talking about the True Print Firefox extension. That's a good thing, but completely separate.
Right. So
it's not just tie-ins from photo applications. I mean, you've got
music.
Music is another example. iTunes talks to the iTunes Music Store, but there's no reason why Rhythmbox couldn't integrate with people who sell music.
All
for
of MP3.
All of MP3.org, for example.
They're still going.
No, I think they've been.
They're in the process of shutting down.
So what stops, I know someone who bought a lot of stuff
going to those six companies and talking to them about it.
No, because here's the thing, though.
Presumably,
right?
Nothing from my perspective, but do you think there is anything that stops them doing it?
Can I say what I think?
Yeah, go.
No.
Thanks. Cheers.
We're not interested in your views.
That's what we're interested in.
Right, F-Spot, right? F-Spot is a novel project, is it?
It is.
Yep. Novel.
Right, so, I mean, you can foresee maybe Novell going and saying that, but then there's nothing to stop individual distributions stripping out those relationships, is there? So any agreements that Novell makes will be kind of worthless anyway. Will you please not do that? So I think it's best for... I imagine that the only way that it would be commercially viable is if the distributions made deals with the photo companies. Because, like I say, the distros could just, because it's open source, could just strip out those deals.
Right, okay. But that means that the F-Spot people, for example, have to build the infrastructure in to let people do it.
Well, no.
And then not see any of that lovely, lovely lolly that Bonus Print are prepared to pay
on the list. I thought that with open source you could make your own changes. But
why would you...
You can.
Why would you need to strip it out? I mean, if let's say I wanted to create a media player, because we need another media player, and I could buy stuff from Amazon in my media player, and it uses the Amazon Web Services API.
Yep.
There'd be no reason why I'd need to take that out. It's only if there's a commercial agreement between that
absolutely
project.
What I'm saying is that if a... Let's stick with the F-Spot one, because it's easy. If F-Spot said to six or however many photo processors, we'll put you in there and you give us some money or you give us a cut, then it's almost worthless, because most people get F-Spot through their distro And that F-Spot or Novell cannot guarantee that those distributors will not strip it out. And those
why would they?
Well, they might not, but what they might do is they might prefer to go with some kind of scheme that gives the distro money rather than giving it to F-Spot.
Think about it. I mean, if Novell are funding the development of F-Spot, right? They're paying Larry Ewing. And imagine Novell go to Bonus Print, who are a photo processor, and say, pay us some money and we'll print these photos in Bonus Print button into F-Spot. Ubuntu then take it and then think, now hang on, they approach TruePrint and say, pay us and we'll change that button for a print this in TruePrint. I mean, is that how you think it should work?
Is that
the best way it should work?
I think this is a value-added thing that distros could add.
Tie into commercial services.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting way. I've never really thought about it that much, but it would be a...
You're giving Mr. Shuttleworth ideas here.
But then the problem comes that why, you know, if Novell see that, they're going to get mighty pissed off probably because they're thinking, well, there's a revenue stream we've lost. Obviously, they've got Suzy to push it through.
Not necessarily, because F-Spot is developed as an upstream project.
Sure, yeah, but...
I'd imagine that what would happen is that the upstream project wouldn't have that functionality in, and then they'd add that at the distro level.
Which is what I was saying earlier, that the upstream project, F-Spot in this case, they have to put in the effort to provide an infrastructure for people to plug in commercial tie-ins.
Yeah.
But then other people take that and then basically sell space on that.
Yeah.
So Larry Ewing does all the work and doesn't see any of the lovely loot.
Well, not necessarily.
From,
I mean,
seems a little bit unfair.
Yeah, but Larry Ewing hacks on the application, doesn't see any of the loot, all the lovely loot from sales of SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop. What's fucking new?
And it's got all that money he made from oil anyway.
And apart from it. Enough. The guy invented the fucking Linux Penguin. He needs to do nothing else.
Right.
You know, that's my mind, so no money for him.
But, I mean, this is the question. How do you see that kind of thing working? Do you really see it working that way? Distros essentially reselling advertising space?
Why the heck not?
I think it'd be a good way for distros to kind of cash in
a revenue stream.
Monetize.
I mean, and the thing is, things like that really are useful. I mean, particularly for...
They could leverage it. And as a revenue stream.
The thing is, it does provide a genuinely useful service, just as the Google
search
thing. A return
on investment.
Provides a genuinely useful service in Firefox, but also is a revenue stream.
I mean, it would be great if I could take something
But it's not a revenue stream for the distributors, it's a revenue stream for the Mozilla project. I mean, how would you feel if Ubuntu, Fedora, whoever, took money from Amazon to replace that Google search with an A9 search?
It wouldn't bother me because I can slap in my own Google thing because that's the way Firefox works. It doesn't stop me from doing it.
And you can always patch it yourself anyway because you've got the source. Even if it wasn't, Firefox happens to make search engines easily pluggable.
Yeah.
The question is whether it would fly with the Linux community and the Linux space that we've got now. Because the one thing that's so nice about Linux at the moment is that it's so devoid of pointless advertising and hookings.
There is a distinction, quite a big distinction, between people selling advertising space and people actually adding a function. There is no way to turn my photos into really proper professionally printed photos without a tie with some kind of commercial organization who does that.
I mean, what I was going to say
flying around, no?
Yeah. What I was going to say is kind of the difference between a Linux desktop or even a Mac OS X desktop and a Windows desktop on a pre-installed machine. You know, if you go out and get, like, I remember when I got my Sony Vaio, right, and it had Windows pre-installed in it, I thought I'll boot it once to have a look at what it's like because I hadn't used Windows for ages. And there was so much pointless little shit on there. There was loads of tiny pointless little applications that hooked into
CompuServe.
And all of this crap on there. And one of the things that's nice about the Linux desktop is that you don't have half that shit in there.
I'll tell you something interesting about that. I only found this out quite recently. The reason all that crap is in there is because the people who make those applications pay for placement on pre-installed machines, and that the money that PC manufacturers get from that is often the difference between making a loss on that machine and making a profit.
Another reason, people
buy it for that shit.
But no, people don't buy it for the shit. But it say
the
people who are selling the PC they buy the bits or whatever, and it costs £300, and they have to buy a copy of Windows onto it, and that costs another £70. So that's £370. They sell it for £425. That extra money they made, they probably lose in shipping or whatever. But if they can put get £50 off of a fiver off of CompuServe and a fiver off of Prodigy and a fiver off this to put all these little connect to our service things on their desktop. That's the difference between them making a profit selling that machine and them making a loss.
Also,
I had no idea that was the case.
And who loses?
The customer.
The other reason they do it is so that Microsoft don't get antitrusted for just putting an MSN logo on there.
Do you know that?
Why?
Yeah.
Really?
Why the hell would... Whose motive is it to do that other than Microsoft
themselves?
Yeah, I
was going to say.
Why would Microsoft are putting CompuServe logos on there?
No, Microsoft put MSN on, and if they don't make it easy for other people to... I'm sure that on a OEM version of Windows, when you install it, it puts a link for something like AOL as well.
Possibly.
Because if
you go and get stock Windows, it advertises AOL.
I'm pretty sure there was something.
This was maybe back in the Windows 98 days.
Isn't this with HyperConnect or whatever?
I mean, look,
it's a long terminal. Hyperterminal.
It's a long time since
still
you've
in there.
Still
useful.
Stock Windows, so
still in there.
I'd be surprised if that's in stock Windows. Normally, these things are value adds, unquote.
I'm sure there was some kind of antitrust thing going on there, though.
But yeah, interesting stuff. That's the hint of let's fucking wrap this segment up.
Yeah.
Interesting segment, but with things
not anymore
to do.
Time waits for no man. It's the end of the show, so let's get some emails ready.
Okay. Shemales.
Emails. Todd Coltonborn writes in.
What?
Who?
Todd Coltonborn writes in.
Sounds like an extra from Neighbours.
Is he from the Deep South?
I've no idea, Matthew.
Hey, guys.
Does he have a wooden fence that he talks to his neighbour over?
King of the Hill.
Oh, yeah.
I can play that on the guitar.
I thought it was going to be the Bonanza
music. Did I tell you what I dreamt? I was in King of the Hill once.
Really?
It was all a cartoon, and I got off with, like, Lou Ann.
She's gorgeous, though, isn't she?
Oh, yeah.
I wish she was my sister.
Thank you, listeners. Finish. Your attention is important to us.
Sort of.
Anyway, Todd wrote in, said, okay, guys, whoever said you guys are biased towards Ubuntu, that cunt can take a spoon and eat my ass.
How very nice of...
If he doesn't like it, tell him to go and do his own podcast and call it I'm a Silly Cunt. You guys have a great show. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Nice one, Todd.
Well, thanks for those encouraging words, Todd.
Todd defences. We didn't mean to take the piss out of your name. It's all forgiven.
Thanks, Todd.
Take a spoon and eat my ass.
Anyway,
thank you.
Which way are we going? Moving on, then.
We like the sentiment, anyway.
Is it me next?
Right, yeah.
Oh, we're going clockwise.
Like email from Philip Quinn. He says, I'd like to add my prediction to yours, presumably after we did predictions.
Yeah, my prediction is you're all wrong.
I predict that Sun and IBM will demerge their software divisions from their core businesses. Then those demerge businesses will both merge together with Red Hat to form a company called Sunny Hat Wearing Machines.
Sunny Hat Wearing what?
Machines. A company dedicated to open source ideals and profit for shareholders. The merged company will then go on to buy Real Networks and maybe Novell if it's not snubbed for sleeping with Microsoft. And if they don't do all this, they should, as size is the only true competitive advantage. P.S. A crystal ball didn't tell me any of this. I made it up. I love the show. Thank you very much, Phil Quinn.
That was a terrific email.
What a great email.
Sunny hat wearing machines. I tell you what, when they set up, I'd love a job with them. That'd be wicked.
That's got to be one of the best emails we've had. Right, Richard Querin, says...
a name so shit, none of us are commenting.
I was going to say Richard Querin, but he says...
That would be Homer gay-hating phobic.
Oh, yeah. He says, congratulations, you got me twice now. More specifically, I believe it's Matt that actually got me. So, sorry about that. You can involve the police if you want. During episode 9 of season 4...
You filthy dogger.
He says that there was some talk about the Open Document Fellowship or fellatio or whatever. He says, at that point, I believe Matt switched into some crotchety dialect. Excuse me, I'm Canadian, so I'm not sure about that. That sounded like maybe a nerdy older man from the north of England. Anyway, says, just out of a campy 80s sitcom, I spewed coffee all over my steering wheel. Incident 2.
Don't drink and drive, you might spill it.
Now this morning on my way into work, listening to episode 10, he did it again. This time a crotchety old lady's voice from somewhere within...
He's loving your voices,
15
Matt.
Minutes, yeah.
So when you put this voice on, the dude spurts a load of coffee.
He says, nothing like cleaning snotty coffee off a nice clean winter jacket.
Snotty coffee? Nice.
It's coming out of his nose.
It came out of his nose. He says, now fuck off, I've got work to do.
Nice.
I can tell someone to fuck off, I've got work to do, in an email that they sent to us.
I like it when the readers get on board with the Log Radio vibe like that.
I do. Yeah.
It's good.
Coffee
it's
through
good.
Nose on steering wheel.
That is lots of good vibe going on, apart from this one.
Ooh.
This is going to be a Jono gets a kicking email, isn't it?
Dun, dun, dun.
Notice how Matt picks out the nice email for Matt.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing the honourable thing and getting the boot with this email.
There are no boots for Matt.
The subject is Boot in the Spuds by Rich Wareham.
I know that name.
Nice, Rich Wareham. Cool.
I know the name.
Why is that cool?
He's giving you a booting. For okay.
Who is he though? I know his name.
I know his name as well, but I'm not sure why.
He's the king.
I'm sure he's.
Is he booting you for being wrong?
I'm sure he maintains lib fuck all.
I believe I've got that installed. There was a security update for it.
I got it from click and run.
He's got various different sizes of fuck all. The guy sends us an email saying, "Hi, great show, etc. Just wanted to say something nice before I boot Jono and the Spuds over his complete lack of computer graphics knowledge. Don's largest Doc Martens in preparation. I'm an R&D guy in the computer games graphics company, and so far I've been very good and not sent an email shouting beard or chin at almost everything you've said in terms of computer games graphics, OpenGL versus DirectX, etc." The comments from Jono in the last show.
He's building up to a really heroic nuclear kicking at this point.
The comments from Jono on the last show about older cards not being able to render things like Crash Bandicoot tipped me over the edge. I became enraged, started shouting "Chinny Raccoon" at the top of my lungs. Fashioned two crumpled tickets and a matchstick into a crude effigy of the collective Lug Radio Spuds and started booting away.
I wasn't saying it. It was Bacon that was saying it. I was disagreeing with him.
After getting off the bus, I composed myself a little and decided to send this missive. "Well, Jono, you are wrong in every important way." That's not going to be the intro bit before the music.
First of all, that should be the intro bit. Secondly, I think I might have that hacked into the stone above my front door. "Jono, you are wrong in every important way."
That's because you live in a cave and people's views of you shows that you live in a cave. Anyway, he says, "Your examples of stuff you think old hardware can't do, etc., water and particle systems are bollocks." In PS1 era games, particle systems were entirely computed on the CPU and just sent to the graphics card like every other bit of the scenery in the world. There was no complex per pixel. Boring.
Basically, you were totally wrong and you should grovel on the pathetic worm that you are.
Nicely summarised.
I think the guy's misrepresented my views a little bit.
No, he hasn't.
Utterly has not.
I think the problem is he knows what he's talking about.
And Yao do not.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right, Rich Wareham.
Right, so thank you.
ID games or whatever you fucking work.
thank you, Rich Wareham, for writing and giving Jono a kicking about being completely wrong.
I don't know that name for some reason.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. You probably summon Crime Watch or something.
You know, I've got an email from Pete.
Pete who?
Just says Pete.
Oh,
right.
Pete. Oh, yeah, because we should know this dude. Yeah.
And he says, funnily enough, he used to play PlayStation 1 games on his old Gateway emulator. They ran with significant improvements to the graphics. And all this was done on a machine with the following specs: a Pentium 3, 500 MHz with 128 megs of SD RAM, and an ATI 128 Rage Pro graphics card. With this in mind, he would be very surprised if you couldn't get Crash Bandicoot to play smoothly on a Linux box. I'm laughing because halfway through that sentence he's put "lol," and in brackets he's put, "I just heard someone introduced as Mike Beard on the radio."
Don't get distracted right in the email. All right, listeners. Maybe Crash Bandicoot was the wrong example to outline my point.
Which
wrong.
Reminds me, it was the perfect example that Jono, I was trying wrong to give.
Incidentally, bacon. Right? Just sorry to dip in, right? This is relevant to this subject, right? We had an email from John Alley, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, "I'm sure you're going to get a ton of email about this." No shit. Ack is right again. That is shit.
That is shit, yeah.
The link below is to a story posted today showing the MPD gaming statistics for top PC games of 2006. I'll save you the click through and post the data here. So it doesn't have to be the latest games, but that doesn't mean that NetHack/TuxRacer still aren't complete shit. To me, it's a silly argument anyway. If you want to play games, get a console.
He basically
says that number one, World of Warcraft by Vivendi. Number two, The Sims. This is like November 2004, September 2004. Basically outlining that massive more pigs are the best-selling computer games. Now, Ack, after we recorded the last show, Ack rung me up and said, "I've done some research, And really? It turns out that they're not actually the best-selling computer games. The Sims is the best-selling computer game. Well, a load of people have fucking gone on the discussion forum and says, yeah, Axe, right, Massive Morpigs are the best-selling computer games, but it turns out that they're not.
Well, the interesting thing about it, I think, is that if you take any one particular week right now, the best-selling games might be Massively Mystical Morpigs. the Sims has sold 16 million copies in all, but I don't think it's selling that many right now at the moment. It's just sold masses and masses. I mean, on the list of most popular games, about the 7th or 8th was Populous.
Really?
Yeah, sold 4 million copies.
For the Mega Drive.
Yeah. I don't believe it sold that many copies last
but
week.
But Populous wasn't a peanut M&M Morpig thing, was it?
Peanut M&M Morpig.
It was an isometric doofer, wasn't it?
I think we...
Yeah, I mean, the point I was trying to illustrate was purely that you don't need advanced graphics to play games that people want to buy. But whether it sold 4 million copies 10 years ago or not, I don't know.
This fucking is all irrelevant.
Peanut M&M Morpig.
So, I mean, World of Warcraft, I mean, it's got like 0.5% of the world's population play. I mean, that's fucking an astounding statistic.
It's a pretty disgusting example of the human race, really.
It is.
More people play that than play Second Life, surprisingly.
Well, look. Diggory Laycock.
What?
You made that up.
He's a laycock, honestly, like a lay preacher.
He says, taking the piss out of my name means that you have no valid response to my questions as far as I'm concerned.
On the other hand, your name is Laycock.
Wrong again, your surname is Laycock.
He makes the point.
Read it out.
Is Ack insane? Crash Bandicoot, that was released at least 10 years ago. He says, when CSS was a pipe dream for web designers and Amazon was a description for single-breasted women armed with bows and arrows. He says, he loves
single-breasted. Yeah, woman's got one tit?
They used to chop a boob off to make
really?
It easier to...
Yeah.
No.
That's the...
Really?
That's what...
That's certainly what the myth is. Whether the actual historical Amazon
no woman would cut her
did.
Own breast off.
Is the tit kind of moved to the middle, or does it stay on one side?
No, that's not how it works.
Okay.
Anyway.
No advanced plastic surgery technology 2,000 years ago.
Wow.
Diggory, and let me say it again, Laycock.
Diggory. Says,
let's hear that name one more time.
Diggory Laycock. Would Mr. Laycock please come to the reception?
How are you doing?
Listen, I'm sure he's had a whole fucking school full of this.
How's it going, Diggory? Some kind of guy comes in and goes, bow! It's like, Diggory.
He says he
fucking
loves...
Fucking selector.
He says, I love Lug Radio.
He loved Lug Radio.
Strangely, he doesn't even use Linux, but he does like our style and passion. He does have another question, though. He says, why do you refer to operating systems as OSes? OS is clearly an acronym like RAF or SSH.
Only some of us refer to it as an OS, namely Matthew P.
You wouldn't refer to them as the RAF or SH.
No, you wouldn't refer to it as the RAF. Lots of people refer to it as the RAF.
They do,
yes,
no,
they
but it's got a point. I mean, he has got a point. RAF is an exception.
But anyway, he says...
It's Mac OS X.
No, it's not. It's Mac OS X. What I particularly like...
Masux.
What I particularly like is...
That's
says,
an L-A-S-E-R. Someone's just fired at me there.
What I particularly like is rampant bullying at school because my name's shit.
What I particularly like, Matthew Revelle...
Oh, okay.
...is it says OS is clearly an acronym. Well, yeah, an acronym is a word that you pronounce as a word made up of... anyway.
Yeah, all right. What he means is OS is an initialism.
Well, then, yeah, but... You know, you shouldn't beat us with that. Anyway, you were coming next, I think.
Beat us
no,
with
no, no, no. Oh, bacon.
Are we done?
All right.
I'm sorry, I've shot my load.
As have I. So,
I've got a couple more.
LRL 2007?
I have got more.
I've got a couple more.
But they're not very interesting.
Bore people with them.
Fuck them, yeah.
Oh, well, just very quickly, you wanted an example of two projects that merged. Struts and WebWork, which are two Java web development frameworks.
Excellent. Okay.
They had to deal with united two communities, dealing with upgrade paths from two separate job projects and risk of alienating users.
That's awesome. I never saw that email.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. Some bloke wrote in to complain about the fact that I said Haskell was a shit version of Lisp and it's only good for writing PEG solitaire games. and he says, no, it's completely right. I use Haskell and so do the Linspire team, therefore it's the best programming language that's ever existed.
You can write 3D PEG solitaire.
Was his email address billy@nomates.com?
I should also point out the only working implementation of Perl 6, a language that nobody is using, is currently written in Haskell. I won't start extolling the many virtues of Haskell in this email because I can't think of them. So thank you, Simon Marlowe.
They don't exist.
He doesn't say that at all, actually. He was quite upset that I slagged off Haskell. Him and the other three people who are using it got together and were annoyed about it.
They got together and wrote so a pointless
he says, really enjoy listening to the show, you guys crack me up, and we do appreciate that, Simon Marlowe, but you are completely wrong about Haskell. Sorry, dude.
Did you see that?
Someone's breathing into the mic. Stop it. Thank you. Normal service.
Anyway,
will
so
be
yeah.
Resumed.
Ah.
MPG writes in again.
It's like the MPG fanboy show.
To say more pigs.
Madison's.
Don't require 3D support.
They don't, except
they do. World of Warcraft requires 32 meg 3D graphics card with support for hardware, transform, and lighting. Apparently, the original Sims doesn't.
Hang on, he
Sims
sent you an email
does.
Saying. He sent us an email saying they don't require 3D support, and then
no.
Tells himself that he's wrong, but that he requires.
No, he
3D
sent us
support.
An email saying we said they didn't require 3D support, and we were wrong.
Did we?
According to one of you, alas, I have difficulty telling your voices apart, so I'm sure it was you, Bacon, because you're wrong about everything else in that segment.
Not entirely true.
More pigs.
I
don't
never said
3D
I never said that they didn't need 3D support. I know.
Thank you for that, MPT.
So, what was that noise?
Thank you, my colleague, MPT.
Pigs. That's a
excellent
Black Sabbath song.
So, 2007, Lug Radio.
Oh, Lug Radio live!
I'm so happy about this.
We've been looking at venues already, you'll be pleased to know.
We've got a date.
We've got a date now.
Are we going to announce?
We've got a date until about a week ago. No, we can't do yet.
It's not
Why
booked.
Why not?
It's not booked yet.
No, we can't announce the date.
Come on, it's penciled in.
And remember that one thing that we need to find out about the venue?
It'll be fine.
Like, which venue it is?
we've got a venue lined up that we're pretty 95% sure it's going to be, and it's in Wolverhampton, but we're not going to say where it is.
And we now have some dates we believe penciled in as of about half hour ago.
If you say we can't mention the dates, and I say July, I mean you lie.
Ah, you're so wise.
Yeah.
How devious you
are. Oh, come on. We can
now tell us some secrets about launch.
July, yeah. You July. July.
Anyway, I'll be in 7th heaven if you let them know.
Moving
on. Yeah, maybe 8th heaven as well.
Yeah. Moving on.
What's your favourite film?
This is our call for papers.
7.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. I ate it when we
Speakers, come. Send us your papers.
But,
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll shine a light on your house.
Stop.
No matter which media you send your things in on, and we'll centre in.
The wolves may hamp.
Don.
I don't know. Started falling apart there.
Anyway, so
someone's going to send us an email saying, I didn't understand where the fuck you were talking about.
For our French listeners, an appel pour papier. Oh, no. I've lost my pop shield.
Where's your pop shield gone?
Were you the one who
swallowed it? In excitement.
Anyway, moving on slightly.
Matt's got a throat.
Oh, he's a professional, isn't he? Look at that. Just slips his sock off.
He is.
Look at that.
Oh.
So, a call for papers, people.
Yeah.
Matt slid that on very deftly. Yep. Call for papers, yes. We want speakers.
We do want speakers. If you're interested in speaking or exhibiting at Lug Radio Live, drop us an email at show@lugradio.org.
Exhibition space is limited.
Very limited.
Very limited this year.
Matt, are you looking after the expo again?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll fight over that one
later. We'll have a discussion about that later.
We'll figure it out, because we need to have, like, a conference team. You know, like, LCA have, like, the 7 team.
So who? Who's that, John?
LCA, linux.conf.au. Very good conference. Thank you.
It's almost as though you've been away to Australia.
I have been away to Australia. I sat on a plane and got deep vein thrombosis.
No, I don't think you did you?
Is that a metal band?
I thrombosed with my blue vein.
Wicked. I went to Pizza Hut. That's interesting.
That's
because
in
you
my
work
house.
At Pizza Hut.
Sadly, no. Although, if they've got any jobs going, I'll be happy to, you know, talk to you about it.
Put your sock back on. I can hear you breathing into the microphone. It's off-putting for the listeners.
Oh.
Yeah, so we've pretty much sorted out the weekend that it's going to be.
We have started the massive machine that is Lug Radio.
It's going to be phenomenal this year. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Mm-hmm. It is phenomenal. The reason you can tell it's going to be phenomenal is because we haven't got anything organised until now, which is 2 months too late, but we're going to be fine.
Shall we put the rumours of a US version to bed?
Yes,
I think
Ain't
so.
Ain't going to happen, I'm afraid.
I don't think it's going to happen this
we
year.
We were offered things like the Googleplex and all that, but I think it's just going to be, to be honest with you, too much for us to organise both.
But, we can announce, mention any specific names yet, but we can announce that the Lug Radio team will be flying to the US to perform a live Lug Radio Live and Unleashed show.
Can we name the sun? shit, sorry, I honestly didn't mean to say
you
that.
Twat!
The state, I honestly didn't
The sunny
mean to
state
do that.
Where we're going to be.
The sunshine state, that's it.
That's going to set the rumour mill going, isn't it?
You spanner.
Honestly,
I think that calls for a.
What's up about the 7th and 8th of July was on purpose.
We are, well, naming the, we're going to be going to the West Coast.
Right.
So we can't say more than that until it's confirmed. Next show we'll be able to announce it. But we, the Lug Radio team in its entirety, will be going to the West Coast.
Are we sure about that?
And we will be performing a show.
Yeah. Okay.
Do we have
good.
To?
Yes. So, and this show will be open to the Lug Radio listenership
in America
to come over and see us do our thing.
Yes, it
and it's going to be
fantastic.
We can't say when it is because that's going to give it away.
Of course, it is. So we can't say that.
But no, it's going to be this year.
We're be
if
there,
I could have my retina scanned and my fingerprints taken and
probably
rectum printed and things like that.
Well, yes. Rectum printed.
Yeah. Can't you just show it in the mirror?
There's this very small industry for rectum cameras, isn't there? Very literally very small industry.
I believe your industry would be much bigger than usual.
That was a disgusting pedo laugh.
I was trying to limit it at the same time.
Yes,
so we'll call Paul Puppy, eh?
Also, we're going to be at SkyCon in Ireland.
We are going to be at SkyCon.
Aren't we the international travellers?
We are. We've turned into a cabaret act. We're like the crankies of the open source podcast world. I tell you what, Matt, do you want me to wear the outfit? I'll be the little weird woman.
No.
Dates for SkyCon can be found. That.
On the SkyCon website.
Which is skycon.skynet.ie. He's quite right.
It's going to be quite fun, I think.
Yes.
RMS has pulled out.
Your Beaker out of the Muppet Babies.
That's an image I don't want to think of.
It's true. It's Beaker because it's all about me.
Coming from you.
me. Yes, RMS has pulled out.
Yeah.
Prematurely.
Now there's an image you don't want.
Okay.
So,
so we're going to
be a good conference. I mean, get along if you can. If you're in Hoyland,
hello there.
Then get along to
the or if you're in the mainland.
If you want to.
I'm joking, by the way.
If you call it the mainland, if you call England the mainland when we're in Limerick, you're going to get stabbed.
It's
and I'm
a joke.
Mind you, we've been told by a number of people that it's no longer Stab City because, you know.
They now use guns.
Yeah, so if you want us to, if you want to bring your pig along and we can sign it for you if you want.
Is this racism now?
No. We've got proof.
In what way is it not racism?
Because you're half Irish and you're joining in.
I'm not joining in and we do not have proof. Dave Neary gimped a picture of himself holding a pig.
You said in the last episode, did that Spanish woman walk along with a paella under her arm?
Did I miss that?
And you thought, pie.
But that's the Spanish. That's completely
that makes it
different.
All right. Yep, so Lug Radio Live 2007, send us in your paper submissions. We really need you to, you know,
yeah,
get
start
involved.
Rolling in.
Yep.
It's going to be a tremendous event. It's going to be even better than last year.
I tell you what, we might even be able to get a hotel this year that doesn't have the heating on full blast in the middle of summer.
Yep.
Yeah.
But unlikely.
A hotel or a venue.
No, the hotel had the heating on, didn't it?
The venue did as well.
Yeah, that's true. Oh yeah.
The venue. God, I never thought about air conditioning.
This year, we will try quite hard to not fuck up the air conditioning like we always do.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going
to
be tremendous.
Tickets will probably be the same price as last year.
I think so.
Probably.
£5 on the door, £3 if you can make us laugh.
That's the way it works. If you can make us laugh.
International visitors are free. Terms and conditions apply.
make us death.
And, yeah.
Make us death.
May contain nuts.
I just love those adverts. May cause horrific intestinal disease.
Human levels may go up or down.
And if you know famous people who want to come and speak,
tell them to fuck off.
Tell them to mail us.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Show at lugradio.org.
And the speaking the hunt is going to start right now. So we're going to try and get as many people sorted out as soon as possible. And we need your help because it's a community event. So
yes.
We do, definitely. So if you're interested in helping out at Lug Radio, like becoming part of the crew or whatever, definitely. Then do drop us a line.
You can get a snazzy yellow t-shirt.
You can get a snazzy yellow
will
t-shirt.
Will it be yellow?
It will be. And that's first be of all, thanks to our very first sponsor.
It can't be yellow because people from last year might wear it and all get confused.
No, it'll be fine because everyone who was in the crew last year, we're nearly at the point we have to send your t-shirts back to us again.
Yes, yeah. Thanks to our very first sponsor, Bite Mark, for stepping up to the plate once again.
And really? Are they confirmed again for this year?
Confirmed.
They are confirmed.
They are
our block. He's a complete hero.
He is a hero. They are providing very, very full
tall,
sponsorship
thin
of the
hero,
venue.
But hero nonetheless.
Yes, so the block man strikes forth.
Yep. He does.
Awesome.
He strikes again, and we think he's excellent. And we also want to point out that they still uncomplainingly provide total sponsorship for audio.lugradio.org, yep, the canonical Lug Radio archive.
And the fortnightly beating that it gets.
Thank you, Bite Mark.
It isn't the canonical Lug Radio. This Lug Radio isn't owned by Canonical.
How can I put this to you,
you just
right?
Fucking wait.
Canonical, the company, didn't invent the word canonical.
I know, but
it has a real meaning.
I know what you meant, but it made it sound like canonical Lug Radio.
Oh, right. Okay, the Lug Radio archive, the central one, the one we maintain rather
That's
than all the mirrors.
Better.
And thanks to the Mirror Network, by the way. Again.
Yeah, thanks.
I was amazed. I went on the last show.
Thanks to Canonical.
I was amazed how many mirrors we get. We get stacks of
We do loads of mirrors.
Yeah.
It's like the Hall of Mirrors in the Palace of Versailles.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
Aid's familiar with mirrors, aren't you? Looking at your ring piece in the mirror.
It's a long time ago, I was young, what can I tell you?
Yep. The worst thing is, you looked at your arsehole in Nero's mirror.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I think that pretty much sums the show. Goodbye, people.
Yeah, bye.
Good night.
Go and get your mirrors.